In this episode of Growth Revealed, my guest is Frederick Weiss. Frederick is the VP of Marketing at SNET Company with a proven track record of developing innovative marketing strategies that drive business growth. And so with that, welcome, Frederick. It's great to have you on.
Thank you very much, Don. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm really excited to speak with you and go over some marketing things and talk about my book a little bit.
That's the exciting part for me. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. I thank you for having me on. I know I'm probably not the, and I don't believe I am the first guest, but I'm one of the first 10 guests. So I'm really excited to be part of the Phil Collins, the genesis of your podcast here. So yeah, excited.
Yeah, it's funny. I built a bigger podcast in life sciences. So I started in 2020 podcasting. So my podcast journey is a bit weird. I was on a phone call with somebody and they said, gosh, I wish I would have recorded this phone call. And I went, that's a podcast. so from that, 500 something episodes later, I sort of came back to the idea of, I would like to have a podcast focused on like sales and marketing growth. How do companies, how are they looking at sales and marketing growth today? And what can they, what can other people glean from those lessons learned? Right. So that's kind of what started the whole idea of Growth Revealed and what we built here in this podcast. And so you are actually guest number two.
I hear number two is a very esteemed title. I'm happy to be number two.
Well, I mean, I it's funny to me because in listening to podcasts myself, one of the things that I've done is like, hey, whenever you really get in the groove of like listening to the same podcast over and over again, I've gone back to the seminal ones that people have and have tried to listen to like, hey, what did their first episodes, sound like? And, having done a few episodes myself, at least this won't sound as rough as my very first life sciences podcast episode.
I hear you. I did podcasts for a good 10 years hosting my own. We did live podcasts as well, streaming on LinkedIn, Facebook, this, that, and the everything, right? And, along the way you grow and you see where you've come and, for a good amount of time, we left a lot of the earlier podcasts on there just so somebody could go back and compare. And then after a while we said, you know what, maybe we're going to just nix like the first 20.
Yeah.
And that's what we did. But, for me, podcasting was always a way to help me get out of my shell, to help me grow more and to help me connect. Cause, we all have these, we have these bubbles where we have, a certain reach, a diameter of, people that we, that inspire us, that we talk to, but sometimes we don't talk to everybody. And it helped me reach out to different types of people that provided me with a good amount of insight and helped me work on myself, build myself, and provide a better product for the audience. And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting journey because you get to really dig into people and like their background and understand a little bit more. And then also you start to hear similarities amongst, guests as well. So, it's all a good thing, but that does lead me to my first question for you. So, this is much more about you than it is me or the podcast. And so I wanted to just ask, what is it that led you, to really be in the area of, marketing and, communications leadership? What led you here?
Well, I think to get me, the way I got into marketing is that I initially started off, from designing, developing content creator back in the day. I graduated from a school called the Ringling College of Art and Design in Sarasota, Florida. And from there, I was very much into how things looked. And then, I got more into the user experience part of it and how they worked. And that kind of naturally brought me into the marketing realm, the storytelling realm. And I really fell in love with stories. And I think, just like anyone else. That kind of love for storytelling came from when I was a kid, and I always wanted to know like why people did the things they did and how they got into the things they became. Like what was the genesis of their career? Why did they do that certain thing? I think from there, that kind of grew into more of a passion for storytelling. It grew into a passion for being able to help other people and bring other people up as I moved along in my career. And I think, you know, it's really important to define, Don, what a leader is, because I think you said leadership. A leader isn't just a fancy title. At least, you know, that's what I've come to learn, thank goodness. Leadership isn't about, you know, you're the VP of this or the director of that. It's, you could be a leader at any role in your career, as long as you're someone that looks to the left and to the right of you. And I don't think I'm making this up. This is probably one of those things I read and don't remember from whom. But it's looking at those people that are in your peripheral, adjacent to you, what have you, and looking to see how you could help them and be an advocate for them and help them move up as well. Because when we do that, we help each other and we all grow together. And that's what being a leader is. It's not, you know, just about sitting at a fancy desk. Sometimes about, you know, going to Starbucks and bringing the team a cup of coffee, or, you know, running out and bringing lunch for everybody. That's a leader. It's very different from a boss who's just, you know, that person that's saying, do this, do this, do this. We've all had that example of, you know, of Voldemort that led us down a path and said, do this. But a true leader is somebody that gets in the front and is saying, hey, you know what? I know the way, follow me. And it's the right path. And it's somebody that, and I'm probably going a little too long with my answer here, but it's somebody that inspires others.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, don't hold back in terms of sharing. So from my perspective, yeah. You know, look, I don't time podcast. I don't close the door in 30 minutes. Anybody okay. that's listened to my other gotcha. Episodes knows that we will finish, you know, what we set out to tell in terms of the complete story of Frederick Weiss and, you know, kind of what, you know, what your story is. And so I want to make sure you get that time. But I also want to say in terms of your last answer, I mean, I agree with you. I think having leaders that are open to be not just people that point the way, but also that will help clear the path. I mean, I oftentimes would tell, you know, teams that I would work with, look, I mean, most of my day is spent clearing things out of your way. So how do I help you with that? And if I know that, then, you know, we can all be successful. And so that leads me to my next question, though, for you, which is, you know, mm-hmm. what does the day-to-day look like for you in your current role?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, sometimes my day-to-day could be anything from living in Outlook and haunted by emails and trying my very best to get things done. But, you know, I also have methods and things, and I can always dive into that, too. And I'll try to provide some privacy on certain things, and we could always dive into more depending on what you want to talk about. But, you know, sometimes it's just living in Outlook and aligning and collaborating with people. Sometimes it's living in Zoho, getting into our CRM, cadences, automations, and looking at why things work, why people clicked on certain things, looking at the analytics, our ICP, and really thinking about is our ideal client profile the right person? Is our IPP, our ideal partner profile, the right person? And trying to boil those personas down and enhance them in a way, enrich them in a way that meets whatever those needs are that are, you know, germinating from whatever the aspects are that, you know, the business communicates, meaning if we're performing like this quarter, maybe we need to make a pivot and move in a different way. But so I guess the short answer is my day-to-day is a mix of strategy, creativity, and collaboration. And, you know, I oversee things like our brand positioning, our partner marketing, lead generation, everything like that. So, you know, I guess to close it out, my day-to-day really is about focusing on clarity, helping teams and partners understand who the company is and why we're different.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's so important because I feel like there are a lot of people today that we work with that, you know, essentially are saying a lot of the same things. Like, look, there's so much to get done. And to be honest, like, how do you make sure that you're pointing that, you know, right direction, especially to people that you're working with? You can't do all the tactical stuff yourself, but there's a ton of stuff that I feel like, especially on the marketing or sales leaders team, marketing or sales leaders plate, that essentially, you know, whether you have a team or not, you've got to figure out how best to leverage the people in front of you. Go ahead. Yeah.
I was going to say, not only that, but you also have to think about, you know, when you're doing those things, it's a lot of it is about communication, right? So not every team knows about those things. So you need to make things transparent. So, you know, if you are organized, like I like to say, I am, I try to be a machine with organizations, documenting things, making sure things are transparent across the organization, especially through different departments and, you know, for our, you know, whether that's our CFO or CEO or our CRO, right? Making sure that there's an easy way for them to discover the information, that they know the information. It's not just a report. They see things in real time and they know what's going on, and having a routine about communicating that and, you know, time blocking and communication, all that stuff equals everybody's happy.
Yeah, it's, I have a brand new teammate who she just started 2 weeks ago, and my communication actually was this week was here are all the blocks of time that I have that are taken. We need to find a spot for you, because she has questions throughout the day. And I feel like during my other sort of segments of my day, she's trying to ask questions. And I'm like, I get that you have questions and I want to answer them. I can't redirect at this point. I have critical things that I have to get done too. And you know, that it just brought that back to me.
Until we have agentive AI to be able to answer all those things for us in real time, that's not going to happen. But, you know, it's also, I know you're trying to move on. I think it's advantageous for me to just address one last point there, is that whenever we do receive emails like that, you got to remember that is, I don't want this to sound like cold or whatever, but that's somebody else's problem. You know, not saying like, you know, you'll get to it when you get to it, of course. And you have to, you know, you got to communicate, say, hey, you know, I appreciate you asking these things, set expectations. I don't have time right now, but by this afternoon or by 3 o'clock tomorrow, I have blocked off on my calendar and I'll get back to you on A, B, and C, but I'll appreciate your patience for right now. So, you know, it's about, being, setting expectations and just being a human and communicating that, rather than, you know, ghosting somebody until you can get to that point. That goes a long way.
Absolutely. So as you look back at your career, what are some of the pivotal points that you would say, hey, look, these are the really key things that I think shaped my approach in terms of growth, storytelling, and team building today?
Oh, gosh, looking back at my career. You know, I think I could point it out to a few different people and a few different things, but I think as far as storytelling, you know, actually makes me think of an interesting, I guess I could still tell the story. With team building, or storytelling rather, you know, my first job in my career, I worked at this really great company with this amazing entrepreneur, and all of a sudden, the company closed because it was raided by the FBI. This is my first job in my career, mind you. FBI coming in, you could imagine. I can't say too much, but I'll say some things that I was told I can say. So I work for this really great, great person, great guy. Couldn't say enough nice things about him at the time. That, you know, one of those people that was a real confidence man, right? They were like, what's that movie with Leonardo DiCaprio, the Catch Me If You Can? You know, how he had different personas, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, not as young. He's more like a Christopher Walken age at the time, I think. But
I was going Wolf of Wall Street. So whenever you said Leonardo DiCaprio, I'm like.
We all have our Leo DiCaprio movies, you know, Romeo and Juliet, you know, I don't know. He was always very complimentative. He was a very complimentative. Who knows? Complimentary. Thank you. 6'7". That's my kids' terms.
I grew up in Indiana. I can help here and there.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Thank you, Don. I'll ask you for that. You know, he's one of those people that always was like, hey, you know, how's your mom doing? Or how's your wife? But I saw that post about your dog. I hope you're doing well. Like, super nice guy. Hey, nice guy. Thanks. You know, that confidence and that that charm, that charisma, that riz, it went a long way, right? You really believed in this person. And, the positive angle there was that I learned that being positive was one of those things that inspired people. Even when things were tough, the work was really busy, it wasn't about so much that somebody got a different title or somebody got a bonus. Obviously those things are inspiring and make people work better, but just that little dab, a little salt and pepper, a little seasoning of just being nice. Oh my gosh, Don, that just goes such a long way to inspire people to say, I love working here. I love working with this people. You know, Greg's a great guy. Sarah's so wonderful. You know, be the nice person. Bring in the donuts every once in a while. You know, little things like that go such a long way to inspire people, to make people's day, to team building, even all that stuff, right? But to get back to the storytelling, one day, unbeknownst to me, the building was closed. And what happened? Well, the FBI raided us. I'm sorry, what? And it was one of those things where, like, you didn't believe it because you're like, what happened? Well, so-and-so, the entrepreneur, actually left the country, took everybody's investment because employees were investing in the company because they love the guy so much. It was a franchise at the time, too, so there's multiple companies. So he took everybody's money, left the country, and was just gone. And, you know, needless to say, Don, that kind of taught me a lesson about trust and storytelling that, you know, for good or bad, you could use storytelling to convince people, bring people along the way with you, and they will follow. Right. But I also learned that this guy was doing this all over the country and just bankrupting different companies and taking their money and going back to England and doing that and made a fortune off of it. And they couldn't catch him.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Definitely. What a catch great me if way you to... can ending.
Yeah. I don't know if Tom Hanks ever was able to connect with this guy or not, but you know, there was no kid in the restaurant that said, "Oh, Barry, blah blah blah." I don't know comics, but you know, none of that happened. So I don't know. I don't know if they ever caught this guy. You know, it's the FBI. They don't need to tell me anything, as far as I know. You know, that taught me that, you know, the power of storytelling is amazing. One, it also taught me about, you know, making sure to look into people a little bit more regarding trust, but also that, you know, a little bit of humility and a sparkle of being nice here and there could really provide people with that inspiration to move forward and do just a little bit more because you wanted to work a little bit harder for him. He was such a nice guy.
Mm-hmm. Important points, but also an important fundamental, which is, you know who you're working with, but you know, certainly the power of storytelling is powerful. So speaking of story, let's talk about your book. So Talk to Humans, sure, and Get Stuff Done. What inspired you to write the book, and how does it tie into the way that you think about leadership and communication in business?
Oh, okay. Well, go with me here, because I like to use this this intro here. So I want to start off by defining what a prosthetic is. And I'm sure that sounds weird, but let me just jump into that. A prosthetic is a artificial device, right, that replaces a body part, whether it's an arm, it's a leg, it's a hand, a foot, whatever, right? I would argue that our devices, our phones, they're modern prosthetics for our missing human connections, empathy, and civility these days, right? You know, we have this symbiotic relationship with this thing, but it's also the poisonous modern prosthetic. And after all, you know, we're still early in evolution, depending on who you want to speak to. You know, we're meaty avatars for the spirit. We're made up of nerves and hearts and brains and blood and all this stuff. And, you know, it's pretty obvious that our biological vehicles are having a hard time catching up with all this evolution and the speed of progress. So my pitch is this, is that we're being programmed by all these social media algorithms that feed us confirmation bias to sell us ads. They help us escape reality, which is great. You know, we all need that now and then, but no one knows what, what reality really is anymore, because these things, I'm going to grab a sip of water. These social platforms aren't real sources of news. They're made to sell ads, their entertainment. And as a result, most people can't relate to other people. They just look at, things on their phone. They look at TikTok. But, you know, if you think about, like, for example, you know, and I don't want to get into politics in any way, shape whatsoever right now, but, you know, look at the political landscape right now, for example, right? It's all about rage farming. And that's, you know, that the clickbait, the rage farming, and you're on one side and you're on the other side. And we have these devices that feed into that. And it puts people into different tribes, so to speak, if you will, if you like. You know, and I try not to subscribe to that. But, you know, every once in a while it's fun. I like to click on a link to look at Three Eye Atlas and wonder if Kermit the Frog's going to be here in November and we're all going to be great pets. You know, that's fun to do. But, you know, on a serious side, you know, we all feel so disconnected, and we end up looking for these ways to escape reality and, you know, not think about our mortgage and not think about how we're going to pay for our kids' education. And, you know, the problem there is that we do need people, and we need people to challenge us and challenge our beliefs. And if we don't do that, we don't grow. We're not challenged. It's really hard for people these days to, like, just see somebody on the side of the road that might need help changing a tire, right? And go, well, I don't know, let me look at the bumper stickers on their car first. When did that happen in reality at any point in history, right? Like, you just, oh, you know, this person needs help, let me help them. We're not putting people first. So
yeah.
I'll close up by saying this, if you entertain me just for two more minutes here. Whether it's social media algorithms, generative AI, agentive AI, or things like chatbots, like ChatGPT or TikTok, you know, that's what MTV was. It's TikTok basically, or whatever, right? Social media, like those platforms that you're on, they're going to give you a cookie. They're going to give you a warm glass of milk with poison in it. And they're going to tell you you're a good boy, pat you on the head, tell you what you want to hear, but it's not going to challenge you. It's not going to it's not going to educate you. It's going to make you a complacent, angry idiot. And that's my book in a nutshell. That's what I kept hearing. The more I read about things, the more I talk to people, it makes me really sad, Don, that we're so disconnected. You know, at Thanksgiving, I can talk to my family. You know, I have family on, you know, both sides. I like to think I am more in the middle. I don't really relate to any political party, and I don't relate to, you know, the far right, and I don't relate to the far left. You know, it's obvious, you know, one team to me, at least, it's obvious, you know, one there's one side that's a little bit more, again, I don't want to get into politics, but, you know, there are certain things that I find deplorable, despicable, and disgusting. And those things need to be addressed. And it's beyond me that people don't understand that. But, you know, that's where we're at as a world, that, you know, there's such a divide. And I think those political leaders and people look at that as their ego. And, you know, we all know that ego is not your amigo. We need to separate ourselves from our religion, and not saying that religion is a good, you know, you can believe whatever you want to believe, but we need to separate ourselves from religion, politics, and business, and just think about that at the end of the day, people are people, and we should treat people as people, not as animals. It comes down to, and I'll close with this, it's what Linus said to Charlie Brown: I don't talk to people about politics, religion, or the Great Pumpkin. You know, just focus on people and who they are, and just love people for being people, and, you know, see if you can learn something along the way.
What I think is most so there are two sort of things that I would sort of extract from the things that you just said. So number one being,
sure,
if you're getting your news and you're getting your feelings from social media, it's all shaped based on an algorithm anyway. So wherever you're stopping, yeah, pausing, looking, watching the video, whatever, all of that stuff is shaped. I've had people tell me, you know, look, I get my news from social media, of which they're only getting fed, you know, then, you know, certain aspects of certain things, which feeds back into that whole thing that you're talking about with regards to rage baiting and, you know, just trying to get people more and more amped up. On the other side, though, what's interesting to me is I live in a community where I know for sure, from a political perspective, we've got all mixes of every single political sort of belief. And when we all get together and have dinner, we honestly have great conversation. So it doesn't matter at that aspect, back to the human level of this. I definitely feel that. I also think, though, and this is just my belief, right? So you and I met over LinkedIn, and you know, hey, look, your bio looks interesting. I'd love to have you come on the podcast. Now, there are lots of people that say no, that just say, you know, look, I don't want any additional connection. I don't want any additional conversation. And it's not just the podcast, by the way. It's like I'm saying no to phone calls. I'm not letting anybody else in, because everybody wants to market something, you know, to me. And and it's interesting to me, because I say this all the time to people. I'm like, look, for the majority of relationships that I have, it's not necessarily to sell somebody something, but I gained something in the fact that you and I have had this conversation. I don't really care about the latter aspect, being the business aspect. If it leads to that, then fine. But I sort of tell people this all the time. It's like, look, if we don't build connection and trust first, it doesn't matter. Nothing's ever going to happen anyway. So to me, it all starts with that connection and, you know, that part of it anyway. And then, hey, if it leads naturally to something, you know, else, so be it. If it doesn't, that's fine too. I got a great conversation out of the whole thing.
Yeah, and it helps you challenge your beliefs. You know, if we don't talk to people on different sides of the aisle, tribes, you know, whatever semantics you want to employ, right? You know, you just want to stay in your bubble. You want to put the sheets over your head and just you know, this is what I believe, and anybody else that believes anything besides that, they're the devil. You know, when you start to dehumanize people, obviously you should take a look at yourself and think about, is that really you doing that, or is that some other external entity making you think you should do that, right? You know, because if you, you know, for example, I just made a joke about, you know, looking up the 3-Eye Atlas thing, you know, just for funny, right? I don't believe in any of that stuff, but you know, I do look it up every once in a while because I think it's funny. But my Facebook feed pushes that out. I see it all the time. So, like, if you're somebody that is, you know, thinks the moon landing is a conspiracy, guess what? Your feed is going to, you know, throw a bunch of those videos in there. And all of a sudden you're going to be like, yo, me and Joe Rogan think that, you know, the moon was taped at, you know, at some lot in Hoboken, New Jersey. That stuff never happened. You know, I hear it all the time. Yeah, of course you hear it all the time because it's an algorithm telling you whatever you want. Just use ChatGPT, for example. Whenever you ask it something like, hey, I'm thinking about starting a company where I make hot cheese broccoli ice cream. What do you think? ChatGPT is going to say, hey, that's a great idea. That's so interesting. Let's explore that. Oh, wow. It thinks it's a great idea. It gave me such a positive answer. Maybe I should explore that. Everybody else told me that was sounded disgusting and gross. I wonder why.
Yeah. Yeah.
I, just for anybody that's listening to the podcast, or maybe you're watching the video version of this, I just wanted to run through really quickly for people, because I found this really entertaining, and I loved your book, by the way. I sort of picked out key sections of the book and was like, you know, hey, look, I definitely like these, but I want to just run through this for people that might be listening that haven't checked out the book. So sure. The very first part is, you know, the title of the book is Talk to Humans and Get Stuff Done by Frederick Weiss. And so let's just talk about the chapters for a second. So chapter one, get out of your own way. Escape from perfection, like subchapter. Make friends with jealousy, still subchapter. Unfriend your demon, subchapter. And then own your attitude. That's only section one. And then chapter two is get yourself out there, which is great. You know, get an 80% head start. Put this out there, make your own opportunities, and then, you know, on and on it goes. And there were a couple of ones where I was like, this has got to be an interesting chapter. So you get to chapter number three, sell your ideas. The first subchapter, share the pizza. Really? Share the pizza?
So
I want my slice, talking, man.
Of course, we all want our slice. Give me the pizza. Right. I'm a big mushroom and pineapple guy, which, of course, all yuck. Sure. You're going to say that. But I wrote about that in the book, you know, from the other perspective of people mostly saying what you just said. Yuck. But for me, I love it. But the thing there is, most people don't want pineapples on their pizza. Right. They either want a meat lovers or whatever. Just like ideas, you know, you might be sitting at a table and your CFO comes up to you and says, you know what, I think that we should do, we should move the logo over 2 pixels. I think we should change the color from this muted red to bright neon red to really attract attention. Instead of, you know, to me, those are the, you know, the proverbial pineapple. You know, one might not want to have those pineapples. They might pick them off, throw them in the garbage and say, I'm just going to forget those existed. I'm going to eat the rest of this pizza. I think what you need to do, you know, and, you know, this could apply to an organization and any means and any role, is embrace those pineapples, right? Take them, note them down, you know. The CFO says that he likes pineapples. He wrote this to me at this meeting on this time and this date. Take that information, take all those, you know, everybody's 2 cents, and evaluate those collection of pennies at the end of the day and say, okay, what part of these coins makes sense? What's the most valuable coin, and how am I going to spend it? Don't take that that idea, that pineapple, and just throw it out, dismiss it, or, you know, ghost them. Go back and reply to them, and don't reply to them just to them. Reply to them publicly. Say, hey, you know what, so-and-so, I really liked your idea about adding pineapples on the pizza. I really think that's going to move the needle in Q1, Q2, and provide us X amount of results when we go to market with this plan. I'm going to explore that further. And I'm so excited, and I really appreciate you bringing that up. What did I just do there? I didn't throw it out, but I gained some momentum. I gained alignment. I said, hey, you know, whatever that person's name is, right? you know, Bob Frapples. Hey, Bob Frapples, I really like your idea. So now me and Bob Frapples know that, you know, he knows I like his idea. Not only that, I sent it to the whole team working on that idea, making that pizza. And they go, wow, you know, they like Bob Frapples' idea. I'm probably putting in too many fruits here. They like Bob's idea. Right. And they publicly, you know, the old praise in public, et cetera, right? That, you know, I'm communicating that I'm collaborating, I'm aligning with someone, and I'm providing them ownership. That's the biggest thing here, Don, is to provide somebody ownership. Whether you, at the end of the day, eat those pineapples, or if you do move the logo 2 pixels, all you got to do is at some point thank them, communicate that you appreciate them, and make them feel seen, valuable, and heard. And then, you know, you can even say, yeah, I ate the pineapples. I'll drop the pineapple. Getting too confusing. Yeah, I moved the logo by 2 pixels. Great idea, Bob. You don't even have to move the logo 2 pixels. Just show it and share it. And Bob will say, that's great. Bob's not going to look at it anyway, because most likely Bob just really wanted to say something in a meeting. He just wanted to make sure that he didn't look like he's one of those people that was sitting there in the corner taking up oxygen and, you know, had his finger in his nose. A lot of times people speak up in meetings because they feel a need, and it depends on who's in the room or in the virtual room, you know, whether it's, you know, Zoom or, you know, IRL, right? So providing that ownership and providing your communication, it goes so far. I like to say this, Don, and this is, if nobody takes anything else from this conversation, I want them to take this point. You know what a mosaic is, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. You take little pieces of rocks or sand or whatever, and you slowly make a big picture. And when you stand back, you see this big picture, right? With any project, anything that you're doing, whether it's you, your organization, whatever, get everybody else that put a little piece of sand, a rock, a stone, you know, take that idea that your CFO gave you and put that in there, put that little pineapple in there, and use that. And that way, at the end of the day, you have this big picture that everybody worked on. You could take it to your stakeholder, your CEO, and say, look at this project we made. And your CEO will go, hey, you know, applause. That's great. And not only that, you just gained a bunch of advocates, all these people that said, you know what? I also, you know, I made that picture. Oh, you know what? I also made that picture. Everybody made that picture. So now you have advocates for something that you wanted to do in the first place, right? Not to say that, you know, you're dismissing some people's ideas or you're not taking some of their ideas. You should definitely use their ideas because we're, you know, none of us are the smartest person in the room. And we don't always have the best perspective, but use that. And when you make that mosaic, everybody owns it. Everybody will become an advocate. And at the end of the day, you're going to be able to make a lot more pictures, and people are going to see you as somebody that, that isn't an idea hog, if you like, right? You know, we all want that cookie. We all want to be the one person that raised our hand and said, I have, you know, the best idea in the world. And the CEO looks at you, applause, and hands you a cookie or gives you, you know, the bake-off handshake from Paul. That's great. I don't need that. You know, I just want Noel to give me a high five. You know, I just bring ideas, share ideas. Cause if you're always the one seeking the cookie, sometimes your ideas just don't come to fruition. But if you share ideas, you share ownership, and you have all these advocates, you're going to have a better chance of providing a value, ownership, and your idea, everyone's idea, will get accomplished, and everyone will be proud of it and advocate for it.
Yeah, also true.
Curtsy, the end.
And I mean, the interesting part for me in a lot of parts of that answer, though, too, is that by sort of making sure that you've got that group buy-in, it really helps you get to that point of, you know, pulling people along, right? Because part of any effort, whether it's in marketing, in sales, or otherwise, is a change management effort. And that change management effort involves those people feeling like they contributed to your point of the mosaic. And so it's ultimately so
That's
true.
That's it. Yeah. And you know, it's not just the teams, it's your customers. It's your customers' customers, the end user customers, right? So, you know, if they have an idea, you know, be someone that provides solutions, be an entity that provides solutions. If they say, you know what, I want my, you know, product to do A, B, and C. Great. Let's figure that out together. I love your idea. And, you know, you might have some suggestions, but you use that. And again, you make that mosaic. You both came up with A, B, and C, and then they trust you because, you know, you're listening to them and you're delivering on what they said. And trust is the most valuable currency in marketing and business.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you'll never get to the end solution unless there is trust in business or in selling somebody something. So, from your perspective, what makes brands' digital presence truly effective today?
Well, you know, I think with a lot of brands, their digital presence is effective when it's clear, it's concise, and it's human. And I think a lot of people don't do that. And I don't want to cite certain brands because, again, there's some political conversations to be had there. But, you know, your brand should tell a story, and it should be the same story across every touch point, every omni-channel interaction with your customer, from your website, your social media, your email, et cetera. And it should make it easy for people to understand who you are, what you do, and why it matters to them. Yeah. You know, a brand needs to be involved in where their audience is, what they care for, right? So at the end of the day, an effective digital brand presence, it's not just about, I don't know, a design or, you know, how well it connects with people, but it needs to make sure that it drives real business. You know, you could look at a brand like, like Starbucks, right? They started off, I think, in the late 70s, 80s, where they didn't actually make coffee. They made the machines, I think, to make coffee. Or maybe they ground beans. I don't know. But, you know, they started off as a very small company just doing that. And I think in the late 80s, if I'm not mistaken, I'm not a historian, so, do or do not quote me. They started coming up with ideas where, you know, how can we make this more personable? And, you know, was the thing that, that was the Phil Collins. That was the genesis that started the idea of, hey, let's write people's names on a cup. You know, it's right away you're making a connection between the barista, the representative, and the customer. And, you know, sometimes they'll spell it funny or they'll draw a little heart on it or whatever. And it's just that little bit of like extra whatever that, you know, some QSRs, quick service restaurants, you know, if you want to identify them as that in that sector, don't have. And I think having that human connection, you know, especially in a place like a Starbucks where it's, you know, it's not work, it's not the office, it's that in between kind of place where they have nice music, it smells really good, you know, there's that sensory aspect to it. They care about free trade, a lot of things that, you know, the people these days, you know, myself included, care about. You know, they have great reward programs. It's to summarize, I guess, again, I'm making a quick answer, probably way too long. It's about connecting with your customer and making them, providing them an authentic human connection. And we miss that a lot of times, or brands miss that a lot of times when they try to connect to their end user customer. You know, that could be different between B2B or even B2B2C, but you know, that's some of it.
So I'm gonna rewind two things that you covered there. So one is,
yeah, sure.
One of the things that I found recently, and I'm curious to hear if you've seen the same thing or not. But one of the things that I've seen with a lot of our clients is we wind up where before we used to build these really elaborate, complex websites. And you go back to your mosaic idea, good luck finding, you know, the one gem that you're trying to find, right? You spend an hour clicking and trying to find your way through a website. What we started doing with a lot of brands now is, you know, think about that microsite that takes the client from point A to point B without them having to think or look at anything. You talked about your ICP originally, but if you think about the simplest journey that ICP could take from start to finish, if they're ready to go, why not make it as easy as possible in some sort of, you know, microsite? I also sort of, the one thing that I took away from the Starbucks analogy is when Howard Schultz came back, the one thing that he did was a little bit more of that personalization part. I know with the baristas, you know, to make sure that the baristas are connecting with their clients. But the other thing was, and I find it kind of ironic because you never can find them making eye contact as they're making coffee anyway, but he lowered the actual height of the coffee machine so that they could see, you know, the average person could see over it and look at the person who bought the coffee. And they don't normally stand there and chat. I mean, they'll chat whenever they're at the cash register or when they're dropping up the next cup of coffee for somebody else. I've also had them I grew up in Northwest Indiana, right? So near Gary, Indiana. And so if you go to Starbucks, you go to Starbucks there, I feel like they almost treat you like they want to make sure that you're the guy that was intended for that cup of coffee. So they will say, thanks a lot, Don, as I pick up my cup of coffee. But I have a feeling it's more to catch the acknowledgement of, yes, I am Don, than anything else.
Well, I would say to that, Don, yes and no. I think you're absolutely correct. But I think it only works when you actually subscribe and believe in being nice. Like anybody could like walk up and we get like do those like, you know, corporate goofy things like, you know, try to mimic somebody. Like if you're shaking your head, I'll shake my head, you know, do the same things that you're doing. If you cross your arms, you know, all that goofy stuff that you learn from like any of these like weird corporate, like this is how you do this, Tony Robinson kind of thing. Not to diss on him, but like, I think what you want to do is you want to actually practice, and this is going to sound crazy, but hey, maybe actually try being nice and taking that as a thing that you do and connecting with people at a real human level. You would be most people would be surprised on how far that goes. You know, maybe that barista isn't just, you know, looking at a checkbook and thinking about, yeah, I need to make sure that I, you know, say hi to X, Y, and Z. They're actually caring. They're going into the culture. And that's what, you know, the whole idea, you know, and I know it, you know, isn't the same as what we say now about company culture, but that's the whole idea behind a company culture is that, you know, if you actually do care about people, well, foster that. You know, it starts off with not just, you know, the barista saying hi to people and a manager micromanaging and checking off, okay, Thomas said hi to somebody. But it's that manager going and making sure, hey, Thomas, how are you doing? How is your dog doing? Hey, I made you a cup of coffee. I hope you like it. You like it with two sugars, right? You know, being that, again, not a boss, but being a leader, being somebody that inspires somebody and showing them that a little bit of care, passion, being a real person, that goes so far. And again, that's one of those things that we lost, or at least we are losing as we have a large group of people just look down, you know, again, as I used before, at their pseudo prosthetic on their hand.
Yeah. Yeah. Also true. So what's next for you, Frederick? Are there new strategies, creative projects, or ideas that you're excited to explore as you continue to grow your impact?
I think for me, what's next is just to make sure that, you know, I keep on top of technology. I'm really looking forward to a lot of different things, like, you know, for example, relevance AI. I haven't had too much a chance to explore that, but I love the idea of having an agentive bot go in and fill my pipeline while I'm dreaming about cakes, right? I want to make sure that...
Or pineapple on your pizza with your mushrooms.
Exactly. It's the best thing. It's like having chocolate M&Ms in your popcorn. Again, if you haven't tried that, it's wonderful. But anyway, it's that umami flavor. So it's about filling the pipeline. It's about having these bots, these agentive AI tools that sometimes could craft messages even better than a person. But not only that, they could do it in a way where they try things and it fails fast and then it does something else. But, you know, you program it. You put in your ideal client profile. You put in your ideal partner profile. You give it some ideas and you say, hey, let's do this. Let's do that. And you see what works. And then, you know, all of a sudden you start seeing your sales pipeline and your CRM filling in. It says, hey, Thomas, you know, you got 3 leads. Hey, Thomas, you got 10 leads. I know they're interested in X, Y, and Z. Give them a call about that. They're looking to call you tomorrow at 10 o'clock. That kind of stuff really interests me. I'm really looking forward to that kind of stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are up to the speed round. So what I like to say here is quick questions and fast answers. So what's one tool or system or resource that's been a game changer for your business?
One tool or game changer. I'd say, you know, for me, it's not so much about tools. It's about the habit of documenting things and writing things down. I like to tell people that, you know, if you or organization sets you free, I know it's one of those, you know, things people say, but it really does. Like if you need transparency in your organization, make sure that you write everything down, have it in a place where it's accessible to everybody. And it's going to save you and everyone else a lot of time and alignment. Next question.
What's the best piece of growth or leadership advice that you've ever received?
You know, the best piece of advice I'll say that I've given, and then I'll go into what I heard, is I always say, don't walk with legs, run with hunger. Don't make something a want, make it a need. And if it's a need like hunger, you're going to be able to move fast and move quick and do things a lot faster. I just wanted to get that out there. But things that I heard is the best advice is don't wait for permission. If you need to do things, you want to do something, nobody's going to come by and tell you, you know, a parent figure or a mentor and say, you know what, you should go ahead and do that. Just be brave, fail fast, and see what you could do. And I like to end with saying, don't go by the old fake it till you make it. I hate that thing. I like to say this, take it and make it. There, when you fake it and make it, you have this mindset in your brain that's poison that says you're faking what you're doing. I like to say, take it, make it. In other words, accept every opportunity, say yes, and then own it. Take the ownership of making it a reality and making yourself the best at whatever that is.
Such a good answer. What's one simple habit or practice that keeps you focused on progress?
You know, before I dive into any project, I always like to ask myself one question, and that is, who is it for? So it's one of those things that keeps me grounded. Whenever you focus on serving someone instead of impressing everyone, progress becomes a lot clearer, I would say, and a lot more meaningful. So, you know, take that as you will.
If you could fix one bottleneck, what would it be?
Oh, I would remove the idea of being afraid from people. I would remove fear. You know, I know there's toxic.
Another chapter in your book, by the way. I gotta throw in the plug because it's in there.
Thank you. FrederickWeiss.com/book. If you look in the show notes, hopefully. If you remove fear and you take, you know, some careful risks here and there. You got to be afraid not to fail. We don't have a lot of time in this realm, Don. We got to make sure that we do things and do them now. I heard some people say that the most expensive real estate in the world is the graveyard. And it's because that's where there's a bunch of great ideas that are all dead and they're buried underground. They're all treasures that nobody can get to. Sounds morbid, and I'm saying it morbid for a reason, because I want people to be scared. Stop being afraid. Go out there and try things. And if you fail, fail fast and do something else. But don't hold on to your things and don't regret things. Just try stuff.
What do you want your company to be known for a year from now?
Oh, gosh. I guess I want my company to be known for being generous and consistent, showing up and keeping promises and doing the work that actually helps people. That's what I would like us to be known for. You know, we're a company that's a solution kind of company. You know, we've been in business for over 20 years. We're provide a concierge level service. And I want to be able to grow the company and make sure that we could help other companies serve their customers to the best of our abilities.
All right, Frederick Weiss, here's your open stage. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with people before we close out?
Yeah, absolutely, Don. I would say, again, you know, anything that anyone else could do, anything that any other human could do, you could do too. If you want to be an astronaut, and, you know, maybe that sounds crazy, go out, try to be an astronaut. You want to be a designer, you want to be a CEO. There's a person that was able to do that. That means you could do it too. So don't let fear hold you back. Don't let, you know, the opposite of fear, being angry with people or just, you know, people bother you or whatever. Don't let any of that stuff hold you back. Write your own story, and you could do anything that anyone else could do. And matter of fact, you could do it probably even better because you could do it in your own unique way.
Well, thank you so much, Frederick Weiss, for being on the Growth Revealed podcast. I really appreciate you being here, being guest number two. And thanks a lot for sharing your story and for letting us, you know, dive a little deeper into your book as well. I greatly appreciate your time.
I greatly appreciate yours, Don. It was an honor to be a guest on your podcast. And I'm really happy that I did this. And I couldn't thank you enough. Thank you, sir.
Thanks a lot.